Blog Talk Radio.
Nickname hashtag stapling bitch, because I have 1,000 stories, and the stories come in multiple parts. God, what a big news day. There's so much to discuss today. Oof, we got I haven't prepped a traditional story for the Donna Brazile bombshell that dropped this morning, but I am going to cover it. It's just going to be a little floppy because I haven't had the chance to take the key quotes out and whatnot. Maybe after the first break we'll jump into that story. But I have a lot to get to outside of that, including Democrats in the Senate are scolding tech giants in a way that is like 100% Orwellian and incredibly creepy. So that's a big story that nobody's talking about. We have some big news, some good news on the Justice Democrats front. We will discuss that. We have obviously the terrible news about the terror attack that we'll get to. We haven't been on air since that happened, so we will discuss that later on in the show. We got some crazy fundamentalists. It's just a lot. I'm not going to get to all of it, but I'm going to try my damnedest. So without further ado, let's jump right into it, and I think we'll start with the terrible news about the terror attack. We will circle back around to the Donna Brazile bombshell after the first break. This way it gives me a little bit more time to, get my ducks in a row, because I just stumbled across that story this morning. I think it just came out this morning. So, but anyway, all right, let's get started. And like I said, we'll do that with the horrible terror attack. There was a terror attack on Tuesday in New York. This is from CNN. 8 people were killed and almost a dozen injured when a 29-year-old man in a rented pickup truck drove down a busy bicycle path near the World Trade Center Tuesday in Manhattan, New York City. The suspect was identified by two law enforcement sources familiar with the investigation as Saifulo Saipov. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that middle name. He's from Uzbekistan in Central Asia, but had been living in the U.S. since 2010, sources said. Authorities found a note claiming the attack was made in the name of ISIS near the truck used in the attack, a senior law enforcement official said. Quote, "This was an act of terror and a particularly cowardly act of terror," New York Mayor Bill de Blasio said, "aimed at innocent civilians, aimed at people going about their lives who had no idea what was about to hit them." Yeah, so horrendous act of terror. The guy, yeah, literally looks like Bin Laden. Like, he looks like Bin Laden. And this guy is a scumbag. He gets whatever's coming to him. Now, he is not dead, usually, in situations like this when there's either a mass shooting or there's a terror attack. I think probably more often than not, the people involved end up killing themselves. The perpetrator ends up killing himself. But in this case, that didn't happen. They have him in custody. And the fallout, we're going to get to the fallout in a second in terms of what they plan on doing. But what the why? Why? You know, this is a guy who he got into the U.S. and, you know, I think the evidence to this point suggests it's not like we missed somebody who came in who was radical. While he was here, he appears to have become radicalized. But, dude, you're from Uzbekistan. So, you know, one of the rationalizations that these people who are with ISIS or Al-Qaeda give is they talk about how the West, America, has plundered my lands, imperial power America, and we're just getting revenge for what you've done, all these innocent Muslims you've killed. You're from Uzbekistan. You're not from Iraq, you're not from Afghanistan, and that's not me saying it would be okay if this person was from Iraq or Afghanistan, of course not. But in this situation, you should have nothing but thanks and praise for the United States of America. You were let in this country. This country didn't do anything wrong to you. And then furthermore, the logic of going after, by the way, five of the people killed were citizens in Argentina, and they were here on vacation. And there was one person who was Belgian. I think two Americans were killed. But the logic of massacring innocent civilians because of what? Because you think you were harmed by the West? Well, you weren't. Okay, but then the next thing is, well, because they're infidels. Oh, please. According to this guy's own logic, and according to the logic of ISIS, 99% of the Muslim world isn't pure enough for your interpretation of Islam, for your fundamentalist interpretation. So these are the same kinds of people that slaughter Shias and go, they don't count. They slaughter moderate Sunnis, go, they don't count. Slaughter Kurds, you don't count. You know, Sufis, you go down the list of all the different interpretations of Islam. Everybody to them is, they're not pure enough. They're not pure enough, and therefore we will massacre them to prove how superior we are. Well, that's not superior. This is an inferior act. It's a criminal act. It's an act of terrorism. And again, he deserves whatever he's got coming to him. So just a horrific act of terrorism. And it'll be interesting to see what happens from here on out and how they decide to handle it. But we do have the other angle of the story, which is that the government is doing everything in its power to fuck up the case. So listen to this. This is from Slate. The Trump administration has said it considers the New York terror attack suspect to be an enemy combatant. By so labeling the suspect through the president's war powers, the administration can detain him as it would a prisoner of war. The announcement follows urging by Senator John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who said they thought the suspect should be taken to the American prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The suspected attacker, Saifullo Saipov, is a legal permanent resident of the U.S. whom police consider to have been domestically radicalized. But McCain argued that the distinction didn't matter. Quote, he's a terrorist and he should be kept there, John McCain told reporters. And there's no Miranda rights for somebody who kills Americans. So this is now typical of the far right in the United States. They look for opportunities to take due process and habeas corpus and the Constitution and human rights and civil liberties and throw it out the window and go, let's abandon everything we're supposed to believe in and let's abandon liberal values because terrorists exist. And of course, it only works in one direction. If there's somebody who's a Muslim terrorist, then they go, oh, yeah, go hold him in Guantanamo. But by the textbook definition of terrorism, Dylann Roof was a terrorist. He had a manifesto talking about how he's a white supremacist and he believes in Rhodesia and apartheid South Africa and blacks are inferior and yada, yada, yada. By the textbook definition, he's a terrorist. Did any of these assholes say, hey, ship him to Guantanamo Bay? No, they didn't, because they go, well, look, we're a law and order country. And you know how the Republicans always say, law and order, that's what we're about, law and order, law and order. They sure do throw out law and order quickly when they get scared because it's a foreign, somebody who was foreign, but again, legal permanent resident of the U.S., terrorist. So, no, and by the way, this is how you fuck up the case. This is how you fuck up the case because Think about it. What happened at Guantanamo Bay? Well, in the fallout of 9/11, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, got in contact with cohorts in Afghanistan and Pakistan, by the way, warlords in many respects, and said, hey, look, we were just attacked here. This is horrendous. We got to get these people back. Send us people who you know who are jihadists, who are al-Qaeda. So what happened? It's not like Afghanistan and Pakistan and the warlords involved in this transaction were on the up and up and were principled people. No, they rounded up whoever their own political enemies were and they shipped them to us. So we had countless innocent people held at Guantanamo Bay. And over time, we had to slowly release the ones who there was no evidence that they were jihadists. And who, like, you know how the Republicans, they made it, oh my God, Obama's releasing people from Guantanamo. How dare he? The underlying implication of what they're saying is he's releasing, like, jihadists. He's releasing al-Qaeda people. No. They were releasing people who, they were like, we can't find any evidence of any wrongdoing on these people's part because it was just a political grudge that warlords shipped them to us and pretended like they were jihadists, so we'd lock them up. So this is the problem. You put them in an extrajudicial legal limbo sense, and you don't have due process, so you can't establish guilt or innocence. So you're making it more likely to botch this thing and put us in a corner that we can't get out of. Because what are you going to do? Lock somebody up forever, indefinitely, in that situation? Wouldn't everybody be able to rest easier if you go through the proper procedure, go through due process, take this guy to court, and you'll get him? He'll be found guilty in an instant. We know it's him. He's on fucking video. So go through the right process, go through the right procedure, and then, yes, give him life in prison without the possibility of parole, and we're done. We're done. But no, guys like Lindsey Graham and John McCain, they want to throw out our values and everything that we're supposed to believe in the second something like this happens when it's a Muslim terrorist. But again, if it's a white terrorist, they don't want to do that. But my point is, take that mentality you have when it's a white terrorist or when it's a mass shooter. Nobody would think in a million years of going, oh, it's a mass shooter who's an American citizen. Let's send him to Guantanamo. Nobody would think that. So you need to think the same way when it comes to a situation like this, because that's the best way of getting justice. And you, the way to prove that you really believe in the values you espouse is to stick to those principles and those values when the going gets tough. And this is one of those situations where, you know, you go, wow, this guy was a Muslim terrorist who was a legal resident of the United States. Well, I guess some people who aren't as bright might think, let's send him to Guantanamo Bay and potentially botch this thing further. But no, if you really believed in your values, if you believe in the Constitution and due process, and you believe in what America is supposed to stand for, well, yeah, he gets his day in court, and yes, he will be found guilty, and then you lock him up and throw away the key. So it's amazing to me how the law and order people apparently don't really believe in law and order. The people who claim to love the Constitution don't really believe in the Constitution, and they throw out due process the second that it's a Muslim terrorist. Well, no, this is the time when you're supposed to stick to your values the most to prove to the world we're better than everybody involved in this, okay? We're above it. This is a dictatorship acts like that. Oh, well, when it's somebody who's extra bad, well, then I guess we don't really need, legal protections and due process and to have a system set up in place whereby we adjudicate justice. So it's just a sad situation. I don't want them to botch this case. I want them to get it right. And the way you get it right is you go about it through the proper channels and find him guilty. But John McCain and Lindsey Graham and now Trump, of course, they're like, yeah, Guantanamo. Guantanamo sounds like a good idea. Oh, you fucking idiots. Oh, you're so stupid. How could you possibly do that? So this guy is a scumbag, a loathsome bitch, clearly a terrorist, and he should have the book thrown at him, but we should do it the right way so that we make sure there's no chance of this guy getting out. Okay. Corporate Democrats and Republicans are blocking a move to prevent the further destruction of Yemen. bipartisan push to end U.S. support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen has gained political momentum but faces resistance from the number two Democratic lawmaker in the House, Representative Steny Hoyer. Resolution 81, the resolution sponsored by Representative Ro Khanna, Justice Democrat, Walter Jones, a Republican, Mark Pocan, Tom Massey, and 34 other lawmakers, utilizes a provision of the War Powers Act to swiftly terminate U.S. military assistance for the Saudi-led war effort. Several activists working to build support for the measure have told The Intercept that Republican caucus leaders and Hoyer, the minority whip, are pressuring lawmakers to avoid sponsoring the legislation. The political opposition comes as new reports reveal that the Saudi-backed military coalition's constant bombing of Yemen's civilian infrastructure, as well as the blockade of Yemen's port, has resulted in one of the worst humanitarian crises of the 21st century. Nearly a quarter of the country's 28 million residents are living in starvation, and thousands, mostly children, are dying of cholera as shipments of food and medicine have been prevented from reaching Yemen. Advocates are concerned that lawmakers are being pressured against ending the conflict for fear of alienating U.S. allies in the region. Saudi Arabia, notably, has pledged to purchase $100 billion in weapons from American contractors, including companies such as Lockheed Martin and Boeing, that have wide sway on Capitol Hill. The concurrent resolution compels President Donald Trump to remove U.S. military forces from the hostilities in Yemen within 30 days. The resolution draws upon a provision of the War Powers Act passed through a congressional override over former President Richard Nixon's veto designed to rein in unauthorized foreign wars. So this is quite a story because the number two Democrat, Steny Hoyer, is the one who's really blocking this. A Democrat is blocking the move to prevent our aiding and abetting of the bloodbath in Yemen. Okay, the situation in Yemen is as dire as it gets. I just told you, people are starving to death. People are dying from preventable illness because medicine is being stopped, being blockaded. They can't get medicine in. They can't get food in. That's what Saudi Arabia is doing. We're sitting by as women and children starve to death. Then we haven't even gotten into the fact of the sides in this war. So, you know, the Houthis are the ones, they're Shia militants who took over the government in Yemen. Well, guess who's on the ground fighting against the Houthis? It's Sunni militias. Who are those Sunni militias? Al-Qaeda. So Saudi Arabia is using Al-Qaeda on the ground as their foot soldiers, and we are aligning with Al-Qaeda in the fight. Why on earth would we do that? Well, you heard it here. We do that because we don't want to make our friends in the region mad, our allies in the region. So yes, let's watch as they starve a country to death, as people die of preventable illnesses. Let's watch as they bomb open-air markets, mosques, hospitals, schools. They even bombed a school for the blind. And by the way, as this happens, people can see after the fact that these are U.S. weapons. It says made in the USA on the bombs that are killing their family members and their friends. So we are aiding and abetting an atrocity, a genocide. And you have some good Democrats and even some Republicans standing up going, you know what? How about we don't do this? Because Saudi Arabia is an extremist terror state and we shouldn't be allied with them and we shouldn't be doing their bidding so that our defense contractors can make more money. We shouldn't be doing this for business reasons. And what's happening? Most of the Republicans obviously are like, yeah, whatever. Shut the fuck up. And Steny Hoyer. Hey, Steny, how do you sleep at night? Knowing that it's your actions, yes, your actions that are perpetuating a genocide. And that's not hyperbole. That's what you're doing. As good Democrats like Ro Khanna are stepping up and saying, what are we doing here? Why are we doing this? We're de facto aligned with Al-Qaeda in this situation. We're arming a state that is just brazenly taking out civilians, and they don't care. We're sitting there as a country starving to death. So basically, the U.S. is acting like a terror state along with Saudi Arabia, and Steny Hoyer is in favor of that. You know, it reminds me of a Noam Chomsky quote that, you know, people at first glance, there are many people who aren't ready for that quote yet because you need to be, that's like a few steps down the line in terms of, you know, learning the facts and getting the groundwork laid so that you can accept the reality of that quote. But Noam Chomsky says that there's an easy way to stop terrorism. Stop participating in it. So, you know, the U.S., we love to pretend like we're the world police and we believe in, you know, altruism and justice and human rights. Well, obviously that's comical because we act like any, you know, empire ever. It's more about power. It's more about maintaining our business connections and being the sole superpower and dominance and hegemony, however the fuck you say it. But this is an instance where you can see clearly what Noam's talking about. Because he's saying, oh, you want to stop terrorism, right? All the administrations, Republican, Democrat, well, we will be the protectors of human rights and we will stop terrorists. Really? Then call off your own deal with Saudi Arabia. Call off your bombing with them and mapping out the places where they do bomb. Call off the blockade, which you can do. Apply diplomatic pressure to them, which you can do. But no, you're not doing that. You're holding hands with them and frolicking on the beach as they act like a terror state and you act like one with them. So you want to stop terrorism? Stop participating in it. And that's what Representative Ro Khanna is saying. Stop participating in it. Stop arming them. Stop backing them. Stop. Look at the humanitarian crisis and toll that's happening on Yemen, and you don't care, and most Republicans are like, I love it, I'm totally fine with that. Trump, who used to say Saudi Arabia was responsible for 9/11, is like, oh, what are you kidding? They hold my hand, and they whisper sweet nothings in my ear, and I love them now, and they can do whatever they want. And now even Steny Hoyer, top Democrats, are like, whoop, got to keep the corruption and the bribery and the status quo going. So they buy a lot of weapons from us. So we're going to look out for them and try to block these radical do-gooders who say, hey, let's stop arming this terror state and helping them. I literally don't know how guys like Steny Hoyer sleep at night. I don't know how the majority of the Republicans who are in favor of this continued destruction of Yemen and aiding and abetting a genocide, I don't know how they sleep at night. I don't know how Donald Trump sleeps at night. Because Donald Trump especially repeatedly over and over said Saudi Arabia responsible for 9/11, Saudi Arabia responsible for 9/11, they're the number one problem, they're the number one problem. And then when he became president, I think that was the first place he visited, he got endless gifts from them, he's doing a $110 billion weapons deal with them, so he went back on everything he said, and he acts like a standard establishment neocon bitch boy. So, you know, from a guy who seemed to know better on this issue, it just shows he has no core. He has no, fundamental decency. He has no boundaries. He'll go back on whatever because he's like, hey, I'm in the office now, so forget everything I ever said. Now I'll just act like every other president acted. It's pathetic. And credit to Ro Khanna and everybody else who is trying to stop the destruction of Yemen. But Democrats like Steny Hoyer need to get on board. What a pathetic excuse Steny Hoyer is, because this guy is old and worn down by Washington to the point where he's just corrupt, he's a corrupt status quo politician who's unwilling to think outside the box and really try to make this world a better place. Okay. All right, let's do one more, then we'll take our first break. And what I will try to do is, in that break, try to do a little prep on that Donna Brazile story. I read the article, but I didn't prep the story like I would normally prep a story for you guys, where I have the snippets that I want to quote and all that stuff. So I'll try to do that in the short break, so when we come back, we can do that story, because that's a huge story. A fucking throat issue today. So it's been only, a few weeks since the worst mass shooting in U.S. history? By the way, there was a terror attack 2 days ago. And then last night there was also a giant shooting at a Walmart. It just keeps churning on, man. Over 10,000 homicides by guns in the U.S. per year, over 32,000 gun deaths overall, including suicides and accidents. So that's the danger that we, you know, it's so grandfathered in that it doesn't even make a blip in the radar if there's a shooting where, say, two or three people die. You know, it has to be like, eight or more for it to even make the fucking news at this point. But it's been only a few weeks since the worst mass shooting in U.S. history, which happened in Las Vegas. And any and all efforts to reform our gun laws so it doesn't happen again are dead. They're already dead. And think about what happened the day after. Even the NRA was like, you know, maybe bump stocks. Yeah, bump stocks that turn otherwise not fully automatic weapons into fully automatic weapons. Yeah, maybe those have. We're not sure about those either. So it was the first time, Mark's the first time the NRA was like, yeah, maybe something. But wait, you're going to see how that was a sleight of hand trick. And it was a clever move on their part because they got positive PR without actually changing their mind on anything. So let's see what they say here. A leading manufacturer of bump stocks, devices that make semi-automatic weapons function like machine guns, told customers on Tuesday it is resuming sales of them in limited quality. I think I was supposed to say quantities. We would like to take the time to thank all of our customers for their patience and support throughout this past month. Slidefire, the company that produces the devices, said in an email according to The Trace. The announcement comes just 1 month after the mass shooting in Las Vegas, the deadliest such shooting in modern U.S. history. Law enforcement officials said the gunman, Stephen Paddock, used weapons modified with bump stocks to kill 58 people and injure over 500 others at a country music concert outside the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. Texas-based Slidefire temporarily suspended sales of bump stocks in the wake of the October 1st attack and demand quickly spiked for the devices across the country amid fears they would soon be outlawed. The push in Congress for a legislative ban on bump stocks, however, has stalled. Lawmakers have introduced several bills that would do so, but the effort was kneecapped after the National Rifle Association, the powerful gun lobby, said the matter ought to be handled via existing regulations rather than new laws. Under such a scenario, the Trump administration would direct the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives to outlaw bump stocks and similar devices. The ATF is reviewing whether it has the authority to do so. Democrats, however, note the agency has previously said it cannot regulate bump stocks under existing laws. Earlier this week, a bipartisan group of lawmakers introduced legislation that would regulate the purchases of bump stocks, but not ban them outright. The bill, authored by Representative Brian Fitzpatrick, Dina Titus, would require people who wish to purchase a bump stock to register with ATF, pass a background check, and pay a $200 fee. So notice what happens here. The goalposts keep moving. The Overton window keeps going right, further and further, further right. So at first, the conversation was, well, bump stocks, yeah, ban those fucking things. Let's not have a product that makes a weapon fully automatic, because then it's like we allow fully automatic weapons, and it's already law that you can't have a fully automatic weapon. So what a giant fucking loophole this is, where it's a device that can make a weapon a fully automatic weapon. And like I said, even the NRA appeared to be like, yeah, okay, bump stocks, that goes too far. We can't come up with a solid argument as to why they should be allowed, because, yeah, that's kind of crazy to have those things. If we don't allow fully automatic weapons, why would you allow a device that can make a weapon a fully automatic weapon? We don't have an argument for you, so what we'll do is we'll say, sure, we can regulate them. The ATF should look into this and regulate them, and that'll be, you know, a step in the right direction. But notice the sleight of hand trick. They were saying the ATF should look into it and take whatever action is necessary. But the ATF had already previously announced, we don't have the authority to regulate bump stocks. So basically what they did is the equivalent of saying, hey, you know, bump stocks, they're terrible. The Department of Education should really look into bump stocks and then do whatever's necessary moving forward. So in other words, don't do anything. Don't do anything, because what I'm doing is I'm calling on an agency that doesn't have the authority or the ability to regulate said product to regulate that product. Well, no, they can't do it. So what would need to happen is you'd need to have a bill go through Congress that either gives them the authority or gives another government agency the authority to then regulate bump stocks and say we're not going to have them anymore. So it was a clever sleight of hand trick, and it's one I fell for because I said, wow, good for the NRA finally coming out and saying this makes sense. I also made the point that, you know, hey, doesn't this undermine the rest of your logic? Because after every shooting, you say no new gun laws because good guys need guns to fight the bad guys, and there are more good guys than bad guys. So I said, doesn't that destroy your logic on wanting to ban bump stocks? Because what you're admitting is there is a line. It's not like you want people to have all the same weapons that the government has, which is one of your talking points. So there's a line. Now the question is just where's the line? But no, the real point in that story was that they're lying. They're doing a sleight of hand trick. They're saying, sure, regulate them under existing law. Oh, you can't regulate them under existing law? Tee-hee-hee. Oh, look at what we did. We got all this positive press by saying, hey, maybe on bump stocks, but in reality we weren't saying maybe. We were saying no because they knew that the ATF had already said we don't have the authority or the ability to regulate them. And now the fucking weak, bitch-ass Democrats, my God, how pathetic are they? Where, here we go, about a month after it, they're just like, okay, so anyway, yeah, we all agreed on the day after the shooting, well, bump stocks got to go because they don't make any goddamn sense. You're making a weapon fully automatic. We already have a ban on fully automatic weapons. Why the fuck would we have these things? But what do? They move the goalposts now because the Republicans are, again, stuck on no, never do anything. So the Democrats go, okay, fine, you don't even want to regulate bump stocks? Well, then what if we just have a $200 charge for them and another background check for them? Why must you be so fucking weak? You have the winning argument. Why are you ceding ground to the people who are wrong? They're wrong. Why? If I was in charge of strategy for the Democrats, I would be doing a full court press on this and slamming them repeatedly in the media until I was blue in the face. Because all you have to do is go out there and go, it's been a month since the worst mass shooting in U.S. history, and within a week, nobody was talking about it anymore. Is our skin that thick? Have we lost the plot that much that we can't give a shit about our fellow citizens when they get gunned down in cold blood? We need to do something about this. And no, we're not just going to get rid of bump stocks, which, yes, we are going to do, but we're going to do a universal background check, which 93% of Americans want, and the Republicans are blocking it because they're fascists. They don't care what you want. They don't give a shit what the American people want. They're listening to their donors, their NRA donors. So call up your the Republican politician in your state and tell them, no, we're not taking no for an answer. We are going to regulate this. 93% of Americans want a gun background check. 60% want to ban high-capacity magazines. So we're going to ban high-capacity magazines. We're going to ban bump stocks. We're going to ban high-capacity magazines. We're going to do a universal background check with zero exceptions. We're going to have a permitting system to make sure that we can keep better track of these guns, and we're going to treat them like cars. That's what we're going to do. Treat guns like cars because you need to treat them responsibly. So if I'm the Democrats, I am going 100 miles an hour on the offense and just cracking Republican skulls over this because you're right and you'll win the argument if you make the argument. But they're not making the argument, and now the bills they're proposing are getting weaker and weaker. Well, yes, of course, we all agree ban bump stocks. Cut to not even a month later. Well, the way I want to do is maybe if we have a $200 fee for bump stocks, and then you got to have a background check for the bump stocks, but you got to still allow the bump stocks. And no, no, no. And people wonder why our system's so fucked up. Because the Republicans stake the furthest out, far right position possible, and the Democrats are like, we'll meet you halfway. Well, no, that's the fucking furthest right position. How about you argue for a left-wing position? I swear to God, if the Republicans came out tomorrow and said, we want to allow your average American access to biological weapons, the Democrats would go, well, you know, we don't agree, but maybe we can have a registration fee for people who buy their biological weapons. guys, this is the real danger in America. I already told you the number. Over 10,000 homicides every year, over 32,000 gun deaths. The 32,000 number, that represents homicides, suicides, accidents, every kind of gun death imaginable. These numbers in other modern nations are like less than 100. But we have over 10,000 for homicides and over 32,000 for all gun deaths. Now, look, you guys know, I've told you 1,000 times, I'm not in favor of banning guns, nor can we with the Second Amendment. But you have to regulate them in a reasonable way. Of course you do. But this is the real danger. We just had a terror attack 2 days ago. Terrible terror attack. What is it, 8 people dead, 9 people dead, more injured? The number of people who die in the U.S. from terror attacks versus gun violence? Not even close. No, not in the same ballpark, not in the same conversation, not in the same state, not in the same universe. There are way more from gun violence. But we're at the point where something happens with guns, we just move past it immediately. The numbers now are so ridiculous that it's almost like it's out of a bad movie. 59 people dead, over 500 injured, and we're just like, anyway, moving on. And then you get a terror attack, but the Republicans always want to act immediately after a terror attack. Why? Because they want to crack down on immigrants. They want to crack down on refugees. They want to, you know, collectively go after the entire community. Don't let them in the country because of a terror attack. But they don't even want to do mild, rational regulation after a mass shooting where 59 people die and over 500 are injured. Well, then expect to see this continuing, and it's never going to stop. And what we'll do is, collectively as a country, we just shrug now every time there's a mass shooting. I remember when I was a kid and there was the Columbine shooting. That was, we were like, whoa, that can happen? Like, people could just kill people like that? What the fuck? But now we have one of those, like, every other month. It's the new normal. Okay. Got to take a break. When we come back, Donna Brazile and a bunch of other stuff. Stay right there, everybody. Touchdown.
slap you with the left. The left. You will fake, so I'm gonna slap you with the left. The left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Please don't make me slap you with the left. The left. You will fake, so I'm gonna slap you with the left. The left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. God, please forgive me if this shit go left. Cause I can cook a kilo by my goddamn self. In the kitchen, water whipping with the left. I don't know where.
Alright, bitches, we back.
I feel like I'm a woman being
male. Okay. Alright, lot to get to. I'm going to try to do this Donna Brazile story for you. It's a long story, but I think it is worth it. Because, boy, is it a bombshell. So Donna Brazile, who was the head of the DNC, the interim head of the DNC, after Debbie Wasserman Schultz was ousted, after it was found that, she was basically cheating and rigging the primary for Hillary Clinton and biasing the DNC in her favor, Donna Brazile took over, and she was also seemingly a faithful servant of Hillary Clinton's campaign. There was, of course, the big scandal where it was found through the WikiLeaks emails that Donna Brazile was leaking debate questions to Hillary Clinton before the debates when Donna Brazile was working at CNN. So her hands are not clean in any of this, but she basically wrote a mea culpa and came out and said, yeah, mm-hmm, WikiLeaks was right, the Bernie camp was right, everything they thought was happening indeed was happening, and I'm going to give you the inside story of it. So, damn, she's coming clean about the situation that was happening at the DNC, and it's worse than even I thought. So she wrote a big article in Politico. Now, by the way, don't get it twisted. I think she's doing this because she has a book coming out, so she wants to, like, drop a bombshell here so that people go buy her book. But I don't think that takes away from the truth of the claims that she makes in this. I think that this really does back up what the Bernie camp has been saying all along. So she wrote a big article, and it's titled Inside Hillary Clinton's Secret Takeover of the DNC. When I was asked to run the Democratic Party after the Russians hacked our emails, I stumbled onto a shocking truth about the Clinton campaign. And then, so she starts off by laying the groundwork here in a way that's kind of dramatic. She says, before I called Bernie Sanders, I lit a candle in my living room and put on some gospel music. I wanted to center myself for what I knew would be an emotional phone call. I had promised Bernie when I took the helm of the Democratic National Committee after the convention that I would get to the bottom of whether Hillary Clinton's team had rigged the nomination process as a cache of emails stolen by Russian hackers and posted online had suggested. I had my suspicions from the moment I walked in the door of the DNC a month or so earlier, based on the leaked emails, but who knew if some of them might have been forged? I needed to have solid proof, and so did Bernie. She says, so I followed the money. Now, here are some of the key excerpts from this article that give you the specifics. She says, the Saturday morning after the convention in July, I called Gary Gensler, the chief financial officer of Hillary's campaign. He wasted no words. He told me the Democratic Party was broke and $2 million in debt. What? I screamed. I am an officer of the party, and they've been telling me everything is fine and they were raising money with no problems. That wasn't true, he said. Officials from Hillary's campaign had taken a look at the DNC's books. Obama left the party $24 million in debt, $15 million in bank debt, and more than $8 million owed to vendors after the 2012 campaign had been paying that off very slowly. Obama's campaign was not scheduled to pay it off until 2016. Hillary for America, the campaign, and Hillary Victory Fund, its joint fundraising vehicle with the DNC, had taken care of 80% of the remaining debt in 2016, about $10 million, and had placed the party on an allowance. If I didn't know about this, I assume that none of the other officers knew about it either. That was just Debbie's way. In my experience, she didn't come to the officers of the DNC for advice and counsel. She seemed to make decisions on her own and let us know at the last minute what she had decided, as she had done when she told us about the hacking only minutes before the Washington Post broke the news. On the phone, Gary told me the DNC had needed a $2 million loan, which the campaign had arranged. No, that can't be true, I said. The party cannot take out a loan without the unanimous agreement of all the officers. Gary, how did they do this without me knowing, I asked. I don't know how Debbie relates to the officers, Gary said. He described the party as fully under the control of Hillary's campaign, which seemed to confirm the suspicions of the Bernie camp. The campaign had the DNC on life support, giving it money every month to meet its basic expenses, while the campaign was using the party as a fundraising clearinghouse. Under FEC law, an individual can contribute a maximum of $2,700 directly to a presidential campaign, but the limits are much higher for contributions to state parties and a party's national committee. Individuals who had maxed out their $2,700 contribution limit to the campaign could write an additional check for $353,400 to the Hillary Victory Fund. That figure represented $10,000 to each of the 32 states' parties who were part of the Victory Fund agreement, $320,000 and $330,400 to the DNC. The money would be deposited in the state's first and transferred to the DNC shortly after that. Money in the battleground states usually stayed in that state, but all the other states funneled that money directly to the DNC, which quickly transferred the money to Brooklyn. Wait, I said. That Victory Fund was supposed to be for whoever was the nominee and the state party races. You're telling me that Hillary has been controlling it since before she got the nomination? Gary said the campaign had to do it or the party would collapse. Quote, that was the deal that Robbie struck with Debbie, he explained, referring to campaign manager Robbie Mook. It was to sustain the DNC. We sent the party nearly $20 million from September until the convention and more to prepare for the election. I at last found the document that described it all, the joint fundraising agreement between the DNC, the Hillary Victory Fund, and Hillary for America. The agreement, signed by Amy Dacey, the former CEO of the DNC, and Robbie Mook, with a copy to Mark Elias, specified that in exchange for raising money and investing in the DNC, Hillary would control the party's finances, strategy, and all the money raised. Her campaign had the right of refusal of who would be the party's communications director, and it would make final decisions on all the other staff. The DNC also was required to consult with the campaign about all other staffing, budgeting, data, analytics, and mailings. Holy fuck. I had been wondering why it was that I couldn't write a press release without passing it by Brooklyn. Well, here was the answer. Donna Brazile is saying the DNC was just another arm of the Clinton campaign. That's how far this went. That's worse than even I thought. I thought, well, okay, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is Hillary Clinton's friend, and they love each other, and Debbie is, in an independent way, running things that bias everything in favor of Hillary Clinton. That's what I thought. No, it's way, way, way deeper than that. There was literally a contract, a financial agreement that gives Hillary control over the entire DNC, gives them control over who's hired and who's fired, gives them control over strategy. You couldn't write a press release from the DNC without running it by Hillary Clinton first. And by the way, the other dirty trick, and she goes on to say this in the article, is like, this is basically like money laundering for her campaign. So, you know, there are limits. When you're running a presidential campaign, to make direct contributions to the candidate, there are limits. But there's not limits to, or the limits are much higher, to political parties. So what does she do? Say, hey, we're basically going to take over the DNC, keep them on a starvation allowance, pay them as little as possible, and then we get to be the beneficiaries of the much bigger fundraising that you can do coming through the DNC. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now, by the way, it is. She goes on, and there's a part of the article where she calls Bernie Sanders and tells him about this. And she's expecting Bernie to go fucking nuts and fly off the handle and go, are you kidding me? I mean, this is worse than anybody imagined and all that stuff. No, he doesn't do that. You know what his first comment was? And boy, this is telling about the kind of guy Bernie Sanders is. Bernie said, how bad is it? So in other words, Hillary's campaign took over the DNC in every conceivable way. Rigged the thing from the top down to benefit her. Bernie, realizing that, goes, how bad is it? Donna Brazile goes, I don't trust the polls. She's up in all the polls. I see a clear lack of enthusiasm for her everywhere around the country that I've traveled. So in other words, this is Bernie saying, okay, you rigged it against me. That's messed up. But is Donald Trump about to be president because of what you did here? Is that what's going to happen? How bad is it? When you rig the thing from the top down, you push an unpopular candidate on everybody because you have the levers of the entire Democratic Party working in your favor. Well, now you just put yourself in a potentially a no-win situation where people are really not all that excited about you because they could smell the bullshit from a mile away and they saw there was some fuckery going on. So Donna Brazile said, look, I don't like it. We're in a terrible situation now, but there's a lack of enthusiasm for her, and we got to make sure Donald Trump doesn't become president. And Bernie said, okay, you're right. He basically swallowed his pride, campaigned for her as tough as he could, but not even the more popular candidate, Bernie Sanders, can make Hillary Clinton appealing enough to win the election. And that is exactly because Hillary's campaign had total control of the DNC from early on in the process. Now, let me tell you what the response is going to be to this. Everybody in the Bernie camp is vindicated, 100%, totally. And every step of the way, the corporate establishment, the mainstream media and corporate Democrats said, no, conspiracy theory. Oh, they gave Bernie a fair shake. Oh, conspiracy. I predict they will now flip on a dime and go from, it was a conspiracy, it's not true, to, well, of course it's true, but everybody already knew it, so let's get past it. Guaranteed. I'd put everything on it. Guaranteed. It's not happening. It's a conspiracy. Crazy Bernie bros. To, well, no, yeah, that was happening. We already knew that. Of course it's happening. Shut up about it. Let's move on. And now we're supposed to believe that Tom Perez is running this thing legit. When Tom Perez is Obama's guy. Obama wanted Hillary more than anybody. Worked behind the scenes to get her to run. Convinced Biden not to run because Hillary was running. And Obama gets his guy at the DNC. The DNC, they purge all the Bernie supporters and Keith Ellison supporters the other day. We covered that story. They're still doing it. For Christ's sake, they're still fucking doing it. After your fuckery led to Donald Trump getting elected. Donald Trump is president because the DNC was an arm of Hillary Clinton's campaign. They pushed her on the American people. They rigged the process. We lost because of what you did. And you're fucking doing it again. You're doing it right in front of our eyes. Get the fuck out of the way. It was the great philosopher Mystical who said, move, bitch. Get out the way, because Justice Democrats are coming for you. We're not gonna stand for this. We're not gonna take this. You expect us to lay on the ground in a chalk outline of ourselves and go, well, it's permanently gonna be rigged. How about no? How about we overtake the party? And you know what? I now think taking over the party is gonna be easier than I expected, because the how deep the corruption goes is so ridiculous that if you wrote it in a movie plot, people would go, come on, you're stretching it. That's how bad this corruption is. Again, the take the Clinton campaign's control of the DNC was so thorough and complete and total that it's more than even I thought. Way more than I thought. You couldn't write a fucking press release without getting Hillary Clinton to approve it. And then they have the nerve. The shameless liars they are. Because every step of the way, when somebody made that point during the campaign, what did they say? Ah, conspiracy? No. Of course we're giving Bernie a fair shot. Of course this thing, the DNC's not taking sides. What are you talking about? You had so thoroughly taken a side that the DNC was the Clinton side. It was an arm of the fucking campaign. The fundraising agreement made it that was the case. And then furthermore, the idea, it wasn't even a mutually beneficial agreement. They kept the DNC on a starvation diet, giving them as little money as possible to just continue operating. And everything else goes to the Clinton campaign, and they get to control every aspect of the DNC, who's hired, who's fired, what the messaging is. And again, there's unbelievable scumbags with how brazen they were in their lies. Because this isn't an issue where it's like, hey, maybe they just, they weren't meaning to lie, but they said something that was misleading, not on purpose. It was 100% on purpose. Every time they told you, no, we're giving it, of course we're giving everybody a fair shake. We're not, DNC isn't biased in favor of Hillary Clinton. That was a brazen lie, because they made that point as they knew they had a joint fundraising agreement that gave Hillary control of the entire goddamn party. And by the way, what else is the consequence of this? If you are making a deal with Hillary so that you can continue going about your business, the DNC, well, why would you do that? Well, you do that because Hillary has the connections to Wall Street. Hillary has the connections to Big Pharma. Hillary has the connections to corporate America, who are going to keep funneling money to her because they know that she's going to do their bidding when she's elected. So Hillary has enough money to go, yeah, sure, we'll siphon $4 million a month or whatever it is to the DNC. That's fine, because that gives me total control of the party. And I'm getting my money through corporate America. So Hillary's whole movement was based on keeping the Democratic Party corporate. That's the whole point. With her in control, it keeps the DNC corporate, and of course her and her campaign corporate. And at this point, there's no distinction between what the DNC is and what Hillary's campaign was. Again, Donna Brazile, her hands are not clean in this. She's the one who, you know, leaked questions to Hillary Clinton before the debates when she was at CNN. And by the way, she was fired because of that. She was fired. But what this is a total and utter vindication of the WikiLeaks emails. Excuse me. This is a total and complete vindication of the WikiLeaks emails. It's an admission, yeah, they're true. Yes, the Bernie camp was right all along. And yes, the control the Clinton campaign had of the DNC every step of the way was even more than you imagined. And they have the nerve to tell you it's a fair process and everything was on the up and up. No, it wasn't. So don't blame people for not goddamn word out of the DNC. We're not going to donate to the DNC. We're going to take down the DNC. We're going to take over the DNC. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Okay. All right. I'll do one more and then I'll take the final break. Congress held a hearing with tech giants and a bunch of Democratic senators delivered genuinely disturbing speeches regarding Russian meddling. So let's see what Dianne Feinstein had to say.
I want to just make a personal comment, because I've been very proud, and I know Senator Harris is as well, to represent this tech community from California. But I must say, I don't think you get it. I think the fact that you're general counsels, you defend your company, that what we're talking about is a cataclysmic change. What we're talking about is the beginning of cyber warfare. What we're talking about is a major foreign power with the sophistication and ability to involve themselves in a presidential election and sow conflict and discontent all over this country. We are not going to go away, gentlemen. And this is a very big deal. I went home last night, profound disappointment. I asked specific questions. I got vague answers. And that just won't do. You have a huge problem on your hands. And the United States is going to be the first of the countries to bring it to your attention, and others are going to follow, I'm sure, because you bear this responsibility. You've created these platforms, and now they are being misused. And you have to be the ones to do something about it, or we will.
Whoa. Okay, so first of all, Justice Democrats has a big announcement coming in regards to Dianne Feinstein. You can check out the Young Turks tonight. Cenk is going to make the announcement there. I'll be making the announcement on my show tomorrow. Justice Democrats later tonight will be making their official press release on this. But big news in regards to Dianne Feinstein. Now, to what she said there, what do you want to do about it? So she's taught Russian meddling. Oh my God, they're taking advantage of Twitter and Facebook and all these tech giants. What do you want to do about it, Dianne? And by the way, what can you do about it? What can we, meaning the government, what can the government do about it? You do know we have a Constitution and a First Amendment, right? What do you want to set up a Ministry of Truth to determine what is good information and what is bad information? And by the way, the tech companies have already done too much in regards to this. Now, why do I say that? Well, I think it was Twitter, I think, that said we're going to ban ads from RT and Sputnik. And they said, well, look, we're doing this because it's propaganda. It's fucking Russian government propaganda. And they do misinformation, so we're going to ban the ads from them. Oh, really? So you're going to ban ads from media outlets that do propaganda and misinformation? Let me know when you're going to ban Fox News ads. Let me know when you're going to ban MSNBC ads. Let me know when you're going to ban ads from all U.S.-based corporate media, because these are the people that pushed the lies, aided and abetted the Bush administration to get us in the war on terror, an offensive war in Iraq against a country that didn't attack us, that led to torture, that led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians, that they refused to call torture torture. They called it enhanced interrogation because Bush wanted them to. That is nothing but propaganda. That's all that is. But what you're not doing is you're not going to be objective. You're not going to say, hey, we have an objective criteria, and our criteria is media outlets that spread propaganda and misinformation are not going to get ads, full stop. No, what you're doing is you're doing the bidding of the U.S. deep state. And you're saying, well, media outlets that spread propaganda and misinformation are going to be banned from doing ads, but only if they're Russian. That is so pathetic. That is so hacky. And yes, it is de facto censorship. That's exactly what it is. You're doing exactly what the U.S. government wants you to do. Russia, Russia, Russia hysteria. So ban the Russian media outlets, but don't ban U.S. outlets or other Western outlets that also spread misinformation. What a fucking joke. What a joke. And what else you want to do? She blames them. This argument drives me fucking nuts because it's just so patently untrue. The idea of Russia sowing discord in America, trying to make us fight with each other and trying to prop up Donald Trump. As if Russia wasn't meddling, well, then we'd all be getting along and holding hands and singing Kumbaya. They're trying to say all these different Black Lives Matter groups, for example, are Russian. They're Russian agents. They're pulling, you know, or Russian trolls, and they're pulling the strings. Guys, let's say it isn't Russia doing that. Let's be kind to them and say, you know what, you're right. Russia set up some fake Black Lives Matter groups. Was it Russia who killed Eric Garner? Was it Russia who killed Walter Scott? Was it Russia who killed Mike Brown? was it Russia who did the drug war and the new Jim Crow and overwhelmingly disproportionately lock up people of color and poor white people? Was it Russia who caused all these problems that are now leading to a backlash? Did Russia put up the Confederate monuments in the Jim Crow era? So let's say there are Russian groups sowing discord, racial tension in the U.S. What do you frickin' do? I don't care. That's a real issue anyway that's going to get attention anyway. If Russia bolsters the conversation by 0.2%, I don't give a fuck. Twitter's banning accounts left and right going, Russian trolls, we're banned. Russian trolls, got to ban the Russian trolls. Well, guess what? Now there are some people who are suing Twitter because they're going, you banned me saying I'm a Russian troll. I'm not a Russian troll. I'm a real person, and you banned my account. This new McCarthyism, we are so embedded in this new McCarthyism that it is now, I think, a literal phase that will be recorded in history in the future, where we look back and we go, the first time there was the Red Scare and McCarthyism, it was done under with Republicans pushing it. Well, now it's done by Democrats. Now Democrats are calling for giant tech companies and media companies to censor people who might be Russian trolls or who might push a Russian view. Now they're the ones who are calling for censorship. They're the ones who are calling for a crackdown. They're the ones who are calling for less free speech, less abiding by the Constitution and the First Amendment. They're the ones just saying the Russians were responsible for that. Now everybody's mind has to shut down, and if you don't agree with that, somehow you're a Putin puppet, a Kremlin puppet. I don't give a fuck if you agree or disagree with my commentary on it. Watch that Dianne Feinstein clip over, and you tell me whether or not something's disturbing about a U.S. senator prodding social media to get more aggressive and to crack down more on the Russians, TM. Okay, quick break when we come back. I still got a bunch of stuff to get to. Don't go anywhere, baby.
Care about me.
to the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Please don't make me slap you with the left. The left. You will fake so I'm gon' drop you with the left. The left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left.
Son of a bitch! Alright, we're back.
The total and complete incineration of the EPA is now complete. The Environmental Protection Agency dismissed its top science counselors without telling them in advance. Two of them told HuffPost on Wednesday. On Tuesday, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt announced a new rule barring scientists who receive EPA research funding from serving on the agenda's three main advisory panels: the Science Advisory Board, the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee, and the Board of Scientific Counselors. The move cleared the way for Pruitt to name industry-backed researchers to take control of the boards, who are meant to serve as a check on policies at the agency. The head of the Science Advisory Board, Peter Thorne, and the head of the Board of Scientific Counselors, Deborah Swackhammer, said they learned from news reporters that they had been replaced. Quote, "This is really a destruction of the scientific integrity at the EPA," said Thorne, a University of Iowa professor of occupational environmental health who has served as the head of the Science Advisory Board since 2015. "It's disheartening to see." Think about what this scumbag did here. And yes, Scott Pruitt is indeed a scumbag. What he did is, he said, if you have taken EPA research funding to do that radical thing called research, if you've done that, well, guess what? Now you cannot sit on the EPA's advisory board. You can't be a top science counselor anymore. You're done. You can't be a top science counselor if you've taken EPA research funding. Well, isn't that a curious thing to do? To ban people who've taken EPA research funding from being top science counselors. You know, in my mind, a rule that would make a lot more sense is if you say, hey, industry-funded people can't be a top science counselor because they have a conflict of interest. If you're taking money from big oil, if you're taking money from coal companies, if you're taking money from frackers, if you're taking money with a clear financial interest in controlling, EPA regulation, well, those people shouldn't be allowed on the board. No, he's doing the exact opposite. He's saying people who've taken research funding from the government cannot be top science counselors. But people who've taken tremendous amounts of money from the industry, those are exactly the people that we want in these positions. So in other words, the conflict of interest with big business is a good thing. That's what we like. We like conflicts of interest with big business because then they'll be hands-off, they'll deregulate, they'll let the companies get away with whatever the fuck they want to get away with. They want to pollute the air, you know, pollute the waterways. Totally fine with that. Totally cool with that. We are in favor of that. But if you've taken science funding to do research, no, now you can't be a top science counselor. You know, this all goes back to the same fucking logic, or lack thereof, that they use the climate change as a hoax crowd uses. And make no mistake about it, these guys are in that crowd. They try to tap dance around it now and act like that's not the case. That is the case. They don't believe in climate science. But what those morons always say is, yeah, well, I mean, come on. You're going to trust people who get these government grants? Do you know nothing about the government grants? First of all, it's next to no money. They're not getting rich off those grants. They're getting grants that are small amounts of money to do their research. In the mind of the people on the far right who don't believe in climate change, they say that that is a corrupting influence, small amounts in grant money to do science research, but it is not a conflict of interest to have ExxonMobil or BP or natural gas companies or any dirty fossil fuel polluters or chemical companies. When those people fund you, no conflict of interest there. No conflict of interest at all. So if there's a privately funded study from all these industries that are known for polluting, and the finding of those studies are, hey, pollution's actually not that bad. Idiots on the far right go, that seems legit. The conspiracy, the conflict of interest, is right in front of your face. It's the people who say climate change is not happening. It's the people who say pollution's not a problem and we could do less regulation. There's your conspiracy. But no, they take these poor scientists at universities who get small amounts of money to do serious research, and they go, yeah, greedy scientists. Greedy. What are you going to make, like $40,000 this year? Greedy. Obviously, this industry-funded scientist who makes hundreds of thousands of dollars, that's totally legit. In the case of Scott Pruitt, so some people, I look at them and I go, you know what? That person knows better. They know better, but they're really corrupt. You know, those people exist on the right where you go, they know they're doing fucked up shit, but they're going along with it. Scott Pruitt, I don't. I think he's stupid. I think it's both. I think he's massively corrupt, but he's also stupid. He sued the EPA over a dozen times. I mean, a guy who has a grudge, he really believes in the Ayn Rand, get rid of all the regulation and everything's better philosophy. The EPA is done. Whoever the next Democratic president is that gets elected, whenever that may be, that person will literally need to build the EPA from the ground up because it is completely and utterly obliterated under this administration. That's the point. They wanted to handcuff it. They wanted to make it non-existent so the companies can get away with doing whatever they want to do, don't care about pollution, don't care about climate change, don't care about regulation. And by the way, let's fire the top science counselors and put in their place industry-funded scientists. But no conflict of interest here. The conflict of interest is when the scientists are on the science council, the ones who, you know, did research. So here's an absolutely mind-boggling story. Defense Department, the war on terror has cost $250 million a day for 16 years. $250 million a day for 16 years for the war on terror. Hey, by the way, you do know that there are more terrorists now than there were before we started the war on terror. So the definition of victory would be what? The definition of victory would be eliminating the terrorists, or at the very least, limiting the number of them, right? I mean, that's like obvious. That would be victory. Hey, I limited the number of terrorists. You know, we were able to keep them under this threshold because this threshold is something that we deem to be the biggest threat and yada yada. It was an abject failure. It's like the war on drugs. They call it the war on drugs. There were some people who literally said at the launch of the war on drugs, or even a few years into it, they said, well, the goal of the war on drugs is to eliminate drug use. Eliminate it. We're at the point they haven't even cut it. So the argument should have been, oh, we're trying to eliminate it or at the very least reduce it massively. We haven't even reduced it. There's the same number of people doing drugs or more people doing drugs now than there was before we did the war on drugs. So abject failure across the board. You flushed trillions down the toilet and you got nothing to show for it. Same thing with the war on terror. More terrorists now than there were when we started the war on terror. It has objectively failed. And it costs $250 million a day. American taxpayers have spent $1.46 trillion on wars abroad since September 11, 2001. The Department of Defense periodically releases a cost of war report. The newly released version, obtained by the Federation of American Scientists, Secrecy News blog, covers the time from the September 11 terror attack through mid-2017. The Afghanistan war from 2001 to 2014 and Iraq war from 2003 to 2011 account for the bulk of expenses. More than $1.3 trillion. The continuing presence in Afghanistan and aerial anti-ISIS operations in Iraq and Syria since 2014 have cost a combined $120 billion. The report's costs include only direct war-related expenses, such as operating and maintaining bases, procuring equipment, and paying for and feeding troops. It most notably does not include the expense of veterans' benefits for troops who serve in these wars or the intelligence community's expenses related to global war on terror. Okay, so when you give the total picture, it's actually way more than this. Because when you include all that other stuff that they left out of this analysis, and you extrapolate to future expenses, by the year 2053, the war in Iraq alone will have cost $7 trillion. $7 trillion. That's just Iraq. That's not Afghanistan. That's not all the other places that we're bombing and we're doing missions and stuff. So this $1.46 trillion consideration is a gigantic underestimate, okay? But to this point, what we've already spent, $250 million a day. Could you imagine what we could do with $250 million a day if we weren't doing useless, unnecessary, counterproductive wars overseas? Are you kidding me? Free college, free health care. I mean, we're even with this much money, you're probably throwing universal daycare as well, paid vacation by law. You know, all these things that we could do with this money, rebuild our infrastructure, make it so that we have the number one infrastructure in the world, the opportunities that have been wasted. And the fallout, what, has been more terrorists and, you know, growing anti-American sentiment around the world. We have 900 military bases that cost $100 billion a year to maintain. That's not included in this. Even all this money, we just throw it. It's a money pit. You just throw out however as much money as you possibly can towards war and war-related activities. But everything else, can't afford it, can't afford it, can't afford it. No, we can afford it. We can afford even if we cut the military 50%, we still have the largest military in the world by far and away. And we have so many more resources that we can put towards things that make sense. So enough with the nonsense, man. And by the way, this is what the younger generation, millennials, look at this and they go, you guys are all dumb. Like, the millennial bashing is so fucking funny. Because millennials didn't create this. You built this. The older generations built this. And then they're going to turn around and fucking have scorn with us? Are you kidding me? You got to look in the fucking mirror, guys. This needs to be cleaned up. And that's on our generation, the millennial generation, to do so. And guess what? It is virtually unanimous opinion. Even people on the right, you know, there are more libertarian-leaning Republicans in the millennial generation than there are socially conservative-leaning Republicans who are big-time hawks. So it's time to clean up the mess. Let's get to it. Let's take this money and put it towards something that makes sense. Okay, Brian Fisher, last story of the day. Televangelist and fundamentalist radio host Brian Fisher has roughly 13 people who listen to him, but the group he's affiliated with, the American Family Association, unfortunately has quite a bit of sway over the Republican Party and over the president. So he has a brilliant legal theory for us about the Constitution and who gets to run for office and who doesn't. Let's take a look.
So I'm an evangelical Christian, and I'm worried about the future of religious liberty. I feel an obligation to defend Sikhs and to defend Muslims on why we believe in principled pluralism in America. And so you can't have people running for office. And again, I don't know the particulars of what Moore has said, but as it's been reported, you can't have people running for office saying that being a Muslim would be a disqualification for being in Congress. The Constitution's pretty clear about not having religious litmus tests.
Now, Ben Sasse, I'm sorry to say, is just uninformed about this, as are most Americans, as are most lawyers, as are most legal professors, because the Constitution in Article 6 does prohibit a religious test for federal office. This is exactly true. But what people do not understand is that what the founders meant by religion specifically was Christianity. What Joseph Story said in his monumental commentaries on the Constitution, in the First Amendment, Congress was dealing only with Christianity. So for them, religion was Christianity. So when it says there can be no religious test in Article 6, you can't have a Christian religious test that everybody has to pass in order to be eligible for federal office. It doesn't say a single solitary thing about Islam because the Congress wasn't even dealing with the topic of Islam when they were putting the Constitution together. And I believe Muslims can and should be excluded from Congress for the same reason that communists can and should be and legally are, because they believe in a totalitarian system, totalitarian ideology.
Wow, there's a lot to say about that. First of all, you don't. You are a rigid Christian fundamentalist. You believe in a totalitarian ideology. You believe in religious law. You believe in Christian Sharia. Of course, we have a secular government, and we're not supposed to have religious law. But look at how convenient his argument is. When they say freedom of religion, what they mean is freedom of religion that are only the religion I believe in. So, in other words, freedom of religion means the opposite. When the founders say freedom of religion, they mean not the freedom of religion. Is anybody buying this? No, nobody's buying this, which is why when you led up to your point, you laid out an accurate statement. You said, yeah, most legal scholars and most professors and most Americans disagree with this. That's right, and they're correct, and you're wrong. It doesn't say, you know, he says that according to the Constitution, it's you have freedom of religion, you cannot establish a religion, but they're only referring to, you know, you can't have like a Christian religious test for office. So in other words, yeah, Christians can get elected in the different denomination. Don't test among them. That's the point he's making. But you can, of course, you can reject Buddhists and Hindus and Muslims, and you should reject them. That's what he's saying. But it doesn't say that in the Constitution. You just made that up. You made that up. You want only Christians elected to office. You don't care what denomination of Christian they are. So you say, well, freedom of religion just means freedom of which kind of Christian you are. Stop making shit up. Stop making shit up. But look, it goes to show you the... He's such a fucking hypocrite because he really does believe in religious law. He believes in Christian Sharia. And he's like, well, obviously we can't have Muslims in power because they believe in Sharia. Brian Fisher doesn't even realize how much he agrees with fundamentalist Muslims. Okay, but what's funny is under his ideology, guys like Keith Ellison, go away. You're wrong. You're 100% wrong. We're not even going to let you run for office. Well, then stop pretending you believe in freedom. Stop pretending that you believe in the Constitution, because you don't. You don't believe in the Constitution. You don't believe in freedom. You don't believe in liberty. You don't believe in justice. You believe in a totalitarian system, a dictatorial system, a Christian Sharia system, and a system where you get to determine and micromanage everybody's life, and you determine who gets to run for office and who doesn't get to run for office based on your personal preference. Okay. We're out of time, guys. I love you, and we will see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Peace. Mwah.